Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 57 featuring Devin and Joy Fay. I gotta say, this is a pretty cool episode, you know.
I'm very excited to listen to it.
Yeah. We've known Devin and Joy back when we were at THU. We met them for both years. The first time they were not married yet, and the second time they were.
Yes.
And they've been incredibly fun people to be hanging out with. I loved hanging out with them at THU. Both of them are concept artists in the gaming industry. And it was really interesting to hear about that because I don't really talk to gaming industry concept artists that much and sort of understand the difference of what that takes and what it's about. So I really appreciated that. And just understanding their perspective, what it's like, what they do is really cool. Devin has actually just finished doing a Gnomon Workshop DVD, similar to the one I did several years back, where he talks about doing some concept art in using all kinds of programs, Maya, ZBrush, V-Ray, all kinds of things. And it's really cool. So he's promoting that, and I'll put a link up on that. They're also going to be, both of them are going to be over at Gnomon Live in Australia, and we'll have a link up to that. So you guys should definitely go check it out if you happen to be in Australia. Gina, weren't you supposed to be in Australia this time?
I was. Ian.
That's right. Ian Fales and Gina said they were going to have a little exchange program, but I guess it never actually happened yet.
There's still time.
So that's really cool. Then the other thing that was really interesting talking to Joy was her perspective as a woman. Both as a woman playing video games as well as a woman doing video games and actually working in video games and how that's a little bit different. We obviously, as you guys know, it's actually, we don't have that many women who have been on this podcast, and I'm sort of trying to change that and try to understand their perspective and why, how we can get more women, not only on the podcast, but in the industry as well. So it'd be cool to see that.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, see, I'm trying, Gina.
I know. I love it. It's great.
Okay, cool. Yep. Other things we want to sort of congratulate people on is the VS and Oscar nominations that happened. So they were announced, and it was a really interesting race. A lot of very different films that normally wouldn't necessarily see the light of day are getting a lot of attention right now. So really exciting.
And commercials.
And commercials, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So if you guys are following this, go check out the VES nominees and the Oscar nominees. There's too many to mention, but they're really great. And I'm excited to see how that turns out. I don't think we have any other announcements really this time. I'm going to be traveling to Baltimore next week, so I'll be out of town, but I'll be doing some podcasting while I'm over there. So listen to a couple more interesting ones. Those are much going to be more on the architecture and visualization side of things. So it'll be interesting for those of you who don't know much about that or want to know more about that. All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're going to fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
You guys just announced 1 year of marriage recently.
Yes.
It's been a crazy year.
Yeah, it's been a good year, but we've been together for like 7 years now.
Right.
Well, so not seven, like five.
Really? So was he stalking you for 2 years?
Probably.
I assumed we were together.
Oh, you had a pretend girlfriend?
Yeah, exactly. But no, regardless, we've been together for a while, so, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like.
Marriage is different for sure, but.
What's different about marriage? Okay, so let's say, what do you think is different about marriage?
Absolutely nothing to me. I don't know why you thought things are different.
Oh, for me, like the stability of like having a wife as opposed to like a girlfriend.
Just even saying that, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, this is someone that I can totally count on now. Mm-hmm. We're in this together, basically. You go down, I go down. I go down, you go down. Like that sort of thing. Like, so let's keep each other up, basically.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, a girlfriend is like,
but she was keeping you up. She was standing by your side when you were a girlfriend.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. No, that's definitely true. But I mean, I guess maybe the, you know, the legal stuff and all of that has a little bit more to
do. Yeah, I think
it just kind of weighs on you. That's not the right word.
Well, I know you can get in trouble, but it's also like, you know, changing it from like, you know, my fiance. That's a little bit weird to say sometimes.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
How long were you guys engaged for?
All over a year. Yeah, I think a year and a half.
Just over a year. Yeah.
So you guys really took your time, did it right, right?
Yeah. It's not like we planned for all that time too. We were like, we're engaged now. It's fine for a little while. Let's just kind of, I guess we'll do this for our wedding.
Right.
Yeah. We kept it simple. Like, just friends and drinking, basically, mm-hmm. is
right.
How we approached it. So,
yeah, that's a good way to do it. I mean, just do your wedding like you do your life, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly.
So that's cool. Well, that's awesome that you guys have been married for a year.
Thank you.
Where did you guys meet?
At Noman.
At Noman. Oh, yeah. You guys are both students there.
Yes.
Well, not at the same time. Actually, my first day at Noman, before I even started as a student, I volunteered at an event.
Right.
So I can get to know people beforehand. And a friend of his took me on a tour of it, and he was upstairs working on his reel. So he just graduated.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was kind of got the little upperclassman thing going on. Uh-huh. You know, that helped.
Yeah, you let me use your password.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So which program were you in at Noman? So how long were you there?
Oh, it was the full program at the time. I think it was like 18 months or something like that.
Okay.
Almost 2 years. So yeah, I was just wrapping that up and just working on getting a job basically.
Okay. Well, Noman's pretty good at helping people get a job, right?
Oh, they were awesome. Yeah. It was, even at the time, I believe I was actually lab teching there, mm-hmm. just in the short time that I went from graduating to actually working.
Mm-hmm.
So they even just help support you there, use their computers and just keep things churning while you're looking. It's really good.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I spoke to Alex about this stuff and he's got a really good opinion about education, especially in the arts and especially in the field that we're all involved with in visual effects and stuff like that. I actually am involved a little broader than that. But it's really nice to see his attitude towards that because especially in the arts, I think that there's a lot of people taking advantage of people with you know, for-profit education and stuff
totally.
Like that.
Yep.
But it doesn't sound, Noman is really sort of making sure that they have a lot of people getting jobs and they're supporting that system really well. So that's really great. And I'm happy to hear those stories from me on my side. And obviously you got a pretty good job out of Noman as well, right?
Well, I went to a lot of different jobs after Noman. My first job I actually got before I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
I was on my second to last term and I started my job. And I remember my last term, I had to reschedule everything to be weekends and evenings because I wanted to finish a certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up not finishing that term. Okay. So I actually don't have a certificate from Noman.
Okay.
Noman's awesome and she's still part of Noman and all of that. And one of the big things about going there is like getting a demo reel, getting your foot in the door, learning what you need to learn and get your first job and snowball that. And so it was kind of like, no one cares. No one asks for your certificate. They ask for your demo reel and your job experience.
It's true. I mean, yeah, I've got way too many degrees, but I don't think that made any difference in me getting a job, you know, in this field. It's really about the talent that you have, and Noman makes sure that, one, you have the skill sets that you need, you understand how to make your demo reel, and you've got contacts with people.
Yep.
You know who to talk to and
totally
and that kind of stuff. All right, so that people know specifically, you guys are mostly sort of in the realm of concept artists, right?
Mostly game environment
game
stuff
environments
now. That's kind of where we've settled into.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is that both of you?
Yeah. We pretty much do
We've kind of gone through different paths, but that's where we kind of settled at. That's kind of our niche at this point.
Okay. So game environment design in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Which is cool because, there's something that's a little bit different about it in terms of people who do shot production for the most part, or any kind of game production is, they have to sort of build the environments or build the things that the concept artists design, right?
Okay.
So you guys create those and like pass that through the art department of some kind, right?
Yeah. So like, sometimes we get to do some design stuff, but a lot of it is actually working with the concept artists and stuff like that, fleshing stuff out. But you know, what's funny is we both do different things on the side as well. So we're kind of a little bit all over the place, but.
Yeah. Well, you always have to sort of create different things that are happening on the side. It's just you get too curious. You need people. You need to do different things, you know?
Totally.
I totally get it, which has been really cool. Even now in my, you know, autumn years. I'm sitting here and I'm, you know, I've got a job, I've got a lot of stuff going on, but you know, at the same time, Norman came up to me and he's asked me for some help about some stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I'll totally help you. You know, when someone like that contacts you and you want some help, you'd say
of course you do, right?
No matter what it takes, and you'll make sure it happens. You make sure he gets all the help he needs, and it's about that. And so I'm really happy to be
that's
able
awesome.
To do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. So where are you guys working right now?
I'm at Infinity Ward.
I'm at Dice LA.
Okay. And those are both game companies.
Games. So we always laugh because I'm on Call of Duty and she's on
Battlefield.
Oh. So they're kind of the competitor.
Competitor, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And you do a lot of 3D work, right?
I do. Yeah. So like I said, at work, I kind of do the environment stuff, but then for my own stuff, I do mostly pre-rendered and then more of the design type stuff at home for personal stuff.
Right. Okay. Now, you put out, obviously, you know, so when was it when you graduated approximately?
Oh, gosh, it was like
2009.
Okay. Wow. All right. Yeah. So, and have you been there the whole time or?
No, I've been around. So I was at Blizzard first.
Okay.
In cinematics department as a map painter.
Yep.
And then moved to Infinity Ward basically.
Okay.
So like I said, I've worn a few hats over
the years. Well, everyone has. Yeah. That's the kind of the nature of things. But what's cool about what I saw recently that you did is your new Gnomon DVDs,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So are they DVDs now or are they just all online at this point?
Sadly, I don't think it's a physical DVD anymore. They make the box art and everything for it.
But, yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, but yeah. I don't think they print it anymore. I think it's all just online.
So I had, and I got to say, it was 2006. I did one of the first V-Ray DVDs for Gnomon.
Oh, nice.
Oh, cool.
Long time ago. And it was nice. Still a DVD at that time.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting working with Alex. I mean, that thing is horribly out of date now, so I'm sure they don't sell it. But it was pretty successful. It did really well. And I was really happy. What was hard about it, not so much for you because that's your nature of creating concept art, but for me, what was hard about it was the fact that, you know, Alex wanted to teach people V-Ray and he wanted to find a way to do it. And I came up with this idea that I was going to do two DVDs, one for how to light a scene for exterior lighting and how to light a scene for interior lighting.
Right.
And, but it was the idea is like, I got to come up with a scene. I got to come up with a piece that shows people like real hardcore production. And the thing that's interesting about that is, and you talked about box art, I really feel that box art is like the critical selling point of that DVD.
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? Because that's going to show people is like, this is the quality of work that you're going to learn from mm-hmm. that. So creating that artwork was actually the biggest challenge. And once I had, you know, coming up with ideas like, what am I going to render? What am I going to make? And being someone who works in production, it's tough because I spend so much time doing other people's work.
Right.
Like, it's like, oh yeah, here's the concept. Okay. I'll build that. I'll make that happen. But like coming up with something on the fly is really hard.
Definitely
speaking.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. My blood with Gnomon runs deep. So one of the first cool things they let me do was a masterclass.
Uh-huh.
And, I was doing personal work at the time, but a lot of it was based off of other concept art.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first time. I was like, oh, I need to show like my process on how I create an environment from scratch.
Right.
And it needs to be mine. And I definitely had the panic moment of like, this needs to be all me. Like all these decisions are mine. There's not a lot of people to bounce this off of. I'm not going off of a painting. And it is, that's like by far the hardest part.
So did you work with Joy about that a little bit?
I mean, everything I do is like...
you guys check each other,
just
right?
Constantly. Like
I'm constantly over his shoulder like, why are you doing it that way? I would model it like this. And he like gets props. He's like, oh, Joy, could you just model this for me real quick? And I'm like, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
She helps with props big time, yeah.
That's cool. That's really great. I mean, having that, and then you obviously do a lot of 3D as well? Or?
Yeah. I'm mostly a prop artist, props for environments.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. I really, really love it.
Well, that's the image I saw that you created was unbelievably rich, which was great, right? And that's kind of, I think, the point is to show people how rich you can make an image, right?
And it came the same thing that you were saying. It was like, I worked on that thing for way too long. And like the first 7 months of that was like finishing the image and then it was doing the DVD
right.
and the tutorial. But it was like, it started getting to the point where I'm like, am I ever actually going to make any content for this? Because like, I need to finish this piece eventually.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was all about selling it based off that image first.
And I think that's right. You know, like the people need to realize that making that image, while you're teaching people a lot of great methods and that the creative process of banging through that can take 6 months or 7 months, right?
Totally.
It's a lot of work.
Especially working full time and coming home and doing it at night and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, really hard. Really, really hard. But I got to say, it's interesting to go through that process because I think it sort of awakens you. The reward is when it's done, right?
Totally.
And it feels really cool to have that out there.
Yeah. It was pretty insane to like spend the majority of last year on that project and getting it out and then finally seeing it out and seeing that people liked it and messaging me and like asking questions for following up on it and all this stuff. I was like, oh my God, it's done. Like it's finally done.
Okay,
oh
cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell people a little bit about what's in that. What are you teaching in there and what are the different processes that you go through?
Yeah. So like I said, I've been a matte painter for pre-rendered stuff. And then I also do real-time environments, which are kind of like usually pretty huge and broad and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So I have a lot of different backgrounds and experience. Mm-hmm. And so for the DVD, I basically go from, it's a sci-fi kind of Blade Runner-esque type image.
Right.
And I go from the very beginning of like the idea of like, hey, I want to do something inspired by Blade Runner all the way up until finished like giant scene basically. And I, it's like 6 hours long and I go through every process of
6 hours.
6 hours. Yeah.
Wow.
So it was supposed to be 3 hours and it just kept going and going and going.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like gathering reference, blocking out the scene, doing test blockouts, figuring out your composition, and then just every little thing going into it. So I feel it's pretty comprehensive. It's more of like a higher level. So it's not like click this button, click this button, click this button.
No.
It's more of a process that I go over.
That's the thing, right? I think that at a certain level, you expect people to have gone through some of that a little bit.
And there's so much stuff out there that teaches you what buttons to click. Yeah. Like,
but buttons to click are like the buttons become obsolete in 6 months.
Totally. So that's like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's step one. Like I can't even really start to teach you much until you know that. So I'm just going to assume you know how to model.
You know how to model. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the thing, one of the things I learned when I was in architecture school, soon after I graduated, I was teaching some 3D stuff at the architecture school. And I realized that, you know, in the time that I was in school, which was, you know, 3.5 years of grad school, things had changed so much already in the packages I do. So that teaching someone how to use a 3D package was hard because I knew that it would be obsolete. So I figured the best way to do is to teach people the commonality between the packages. Right. So I taught my 3D class, I taught them Maya and Max at the same time.
Oh, interesting.
And the reason I did that is that I wanted them to see the similarities between the two so that any other package are like, oh, okay, so this is how I rotate here and this is how I rotate there. So totally. There's got to be a tool in this tool that makes me rotate that way. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, that's great.
So I think it's a little bit better to do those types of tutorials, which is really cool. Well, what inspires you guys? What's you know, you talked about inspiration. You were inspired by Blade Runner, which is a great, great thing to do, be inspired by. But what inspires you guys?
Travel.
Travel?
We love travel. Like our honeymoon was crazy because
where'd you guys go?
Okay, so I got these crazy plane tickets. It was like 4 months before our wedding, and we were like, okay, we're probably going to go to Tokyo for our wedding, nice. For our anniversary.
Right.
And I saw these plane tickets online. There was like some sort of fuel charge mistake where it was...
Fuel charge mistake?
Yes. Let me tell you about these tickets.
I didn't trust this at all when it was happening.
Okay, it was New York to Milan and then Prague to Tokyo for $150 a person. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? So we just had to figure out how to get to New York and then how to get from Milan to Prague and then how to get back home.
But you're pretty much going 3/4 of the way around the earth,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Isn't that insane? So that ended up being our trip. We spent a long weekend in Europe and then spent a little over a week in Japan.
In Japan and Tokyo. Yeah.
And it was absolutely incredible because before that, the only time we've been to Europe was for the second THU.
Oh, okay.
And we never even left Troia. Yeah, so we never saw Lisbon or anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we had this like little slice of like, oh, this is kind of a different culture. But this trip was all like, I don't know, all the architecture everywhere was completely different.
Yeah, the history and everything.
All the cobblestones were different. We didn't realize that the cobblestones would be so crazy everywhere. We had to drag our suitcases everywhere.
It was terrible. Yeah.
But it was kind of mind-blowing. And just like especially from the Tokyo part of our trip, that's where we took a lot of photos for the reference for that piece that he just released.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we literally like, and that's what's great. Like we went to an alley in Tokyo and her and I are both just taking pictures of the wall of like random things attached to the wall. Whereas most, if you look up, you know, that alley, everyone's taking a picture of them looking down it or whatever, which is useful as well.
Yeah, but
we wanted to see like
texture reference.
Exactly.
Yeah,
texture reference.
Always collecting like
how are these pipes connected to these other things and all of that, and like trying to sneak pictures behind people's booths and stuff and like how their equipment's set up and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that was huge. And we did a lot of other traveling last year too. We went to Turkey and Romania and Portugal again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's been a big thing for us. We always try and make time every year to go out and just kind of get inspired by other stuff, history and cultures.
That's awesome. I think that's a great, great way to get inspired. Obviously, I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize how interesting and there was David Byrne story, a movie he did. Is it called Short Stories? No, or True Stories. I'm going to have to look it up and I apologize to people. But anyway, David Byrne, you know who David Byrne is, right? Mm-hmm. He's the lead singer of Talking Head. And he did this kind of funky, weird, semi-musical in West Texas about hanging out. And it's a gorgeous movie. At the end of the movie, he talks about how interesting things are when you travel to places and how you no matter where you go, it could be anywhere. It could be, you know, going from New York to West Texas or whatever, that you look at everything and the keyholes are different and the doorknobs
totally,
are different.
Totally.
And things are, and everything you touch, everything you see is interesting and different. And that when you get familiar with that place, you kind of forget about how interesting things are.
Yep.
Mm.
Yep. And as we kind of annoy some of our friends because as environment artists, we're just constantly looking at that stuff. Like you said, not just texture reference, but we're like, oh, look at how these cobblestones are different than the other cobblestones.
Right.
Or that's interesting. There's like raindrops on this wall. I wouldn't have imagined that. Like just constantly pointing that stuff out to each other.
Right.
And we've had friends who are like, you guys just view the world very differently than we do because you're looking at these like details all over the place.
Yeah. I think it's really, really cool to do that. Recently, actually, my sister-in-law has who's really great, and she lives in Texas, and she's sort of been doing her normal job and stuff, and she just decided, and she's older than me, she decided, you know, I just want to travel to some places a little bit more and try some different things, and she found a group online, I guess, of people that are in Houston that are traveling to places, and she got together with these groups and get these group fares to go to places, and now suddenly she took a trip to Iceland. You know,
oh, nice.
Which was
great.
Gorgeous. And it's like, wow, look at that. And she showed those pictures and she's like, oh, and she's just so inspired by everything. Iceland is, you know, one of the most unique places on the planet,
gosh,
right?
Oh my gosh.
I really want to go to Iceland. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's really great that you did that. It's like, I want to go to Iceland too. And I was so inspired. And so she was so excited about it and told us about it and really cool. And then I was like, wow, I want to go to Iceland. And she's like, well, my next trip is the Galapagos Islands. I was like, oh my God. So I'm really excited for her, you know, to do that because that's the thing, right? You're going to find, and both of those are much more about the natural environment,
totally,
right?
Totally, yeah. Yeah. And like coming from the matte painting background, like I love like a beautiful sky anywhere. I'm always like, oh my gosh, it's like the sky I would want to paint right there. And so natural stuff as well is just huge on our list of things to be in awe over.
Right. Yeah. 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 And I, you know, the thing that I find also a lot, and we even see it in LA, we have beautiful skies in LA,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
definitely,
that's something that's really nice to have, but a lot of times I look at the skies in nature and you guys probably see this all the time, but you feel that people look at it and say, if I actually showed someone that sky, they would say that looks fake and wrong,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we get that all the time, yeah.
Yeah.
And one way that I started thinking about it though is 'cause with teaching and stuff, the way I've started thinking about that is like, well, yes, that's beautiful and it has its issues, but like you're always going for like the idyllic version of something, right?
Right.
And even working with Joy, we go for the ideal, like we both have different idyllic versions, right? Mm-hmm. Working with a director, art director. So mm-hmm. that's why you kind of run into that a lot where it's like, no, that exists in real life. Well, just because it exists in real life doesn't mean that it's like...
Doesn't mean it feels natural.
Right, exactly.
You want things to be relatable still, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting.
There was a really, I went to the Oscar Bake-Offs this weekend.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And there was someone who did who said a really important thing that I now I'm like really taking to heart. And he said, there's a difference between, realism and believability.
Mm-hmm. Right. Definitely. Yep. No, that's huge. That's huge for sure.
And there's a lot of times that people do something that looks really real, but people don't believe it, right? Yeah. Mm. They don't believe it to be real because they have an impression in their mind of what's supposed to be real.
Totally.
And I think that's some of the balances that people deal with in environments and understanding what they're supposed to be feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's really tricky. And that's where, you know, the artist part comes in, right? It's like kind of your job to interpretate that stuff and kind of put it out there.
Yeah.
So it feels believable and feels natural.
Yeah. So you guys both are in the game area, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Did you play a lot of games?
Yeah.
Really?
Not tons.
Cool. Yeah, she does. She kicks my butt in a lot of stuff, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I saw your piece that you did with on a THU TV thing. What was that, Rob?
Oh, yeah, with Rob.
With Rob Redman. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great, first of all, the concept of that, it was awesome. Just so people know, the THU TV that's out now, and you guys can purchase it, which is a huge bargain, by the
oh
way.
Oh my gosh, there's so much stuff.
The content on there is like hundreds of hours.
And they keep on giving you more.
Yeah, there's more and more stuff that's happening, but it's basically a lot of different interviews and different ways of talking to people about different subjects, and they curate it towards you know, someone looking for a job or someone to be inspired or some mm-hmm. other story or some battle stories or whatever. So there's lots of different series of talks. But the one that you did, which was a great idea, was it Rob's idea? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was the producer's idea because I remember him telling me, oh, apparently we're going to play video games during all my interviews. I'm like, okay. That sounds fun.
Yeah, exactly. So you guys are like in a cool, you know, very nicely lit white room mm-hmm. playing very old school video games.
Yeah. It was like they had this big old cracked version on a laptop that was, what's it, Mario Kart with Teletubbies in it.
Right.
It was the oddest thing. Bizarre.
Yeah, and I saw someone else was doing something like a Sonic Hedgehog game.
Yeah.
And so you are, what's really cool about it is completely disarming because you're not actually looking at each other while mm-hmm. you're doing the interview, yep. while you're talking to each other. Mm-hmm. You're playing a game. And I remember specifically you were distracted because you were pissed off like, about
because I'm very competitive. Yeah. So it would be really upsetting if I was like getting into a question and all of a sudden I didn't make a turn or something. Right. I would just be so upset. So
yeah.
I have to concentrate.
I could see you as being extraordinarily competitive.
Yes, she is. She is.
Yeah. But it was a really great thing. It was like, you know, having a conversation while doing that. I think what it does is it allows the questions to be a lot more honest because you're kind of
distracted.
Not thinking mm-hmm. about yeah, it. Yeah. You're distracted.
Yeah.
and at the same time, I think it sort of allows people to come into the situation and see that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool to see that. Did you do a THU TV thing?
I didn't. Well, what did I did an interview
sort of
with Jack.
Okay.
I was kind of helped out here or there, but I didn't do any like official interview stuff like she did.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, I kind of filled in on one of them where we were all just kind of hungover. And
yeah. The only thing, I didn't do anything, but Louis did interview me on the opening day with his feather boa.
Yes.
And he put the feather boa on me when we were talking about the opening thing. And then suddenly, like, I did that. I was like, yeah, like THU, I love it, et cetera. And then suddenly on my Twitter, someone put a picture of me in a feather boa. It was like, Chris Nichols is over at THU. It was like, wow, I was on for 5 seconds and someone found the most embarrassing picture they could find of me.
That's awesome. Hey, that seemed like it was Louis' job.
Oh, yeah. It was
just
Louis,
to
definitely
embarrass
Louis
everybody.
Yeah. It's cool. So you guys, okay, let's go back a little bit to THU. You were there 2 years ago.
Yes.
Because I remember you guys there when I, that was my first THU. Was that
yes,
your
that
first?
Was our yes, first that was
okay.
our first
one. Okay. All right. And I was just blown away by THU.
Yep.
I've said this on the podcast before, but basically we went there. It's like, oh, we've heard this is a really interesting event. And we went there and we were like totally, Gina and I thought this is something that was really, really special to, and we knew it was going to be special. And what was really cool is when we all went back, is that we all just felt so like family again.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like we all fell into whatever we were doing last time we were there.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was incredible. Like, we had no idea what to expect the first year that we went because...
Were you guys invited as speakers?
I got invited through Noman again.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Because Noman was a sponsor of the event.
They
at
were
that
sponsored.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Brian had been there the year before for the first year. And so he told me, he's like, you're going to have to do some stuff. It'll be cool, but you'll be able to hang out. And he's like, but trust me, like, you're not going to get your plane tickets till like you feel like it's way too late. You're going to be nervous about it. You're going to be on a boat. Like on a ferry on the way there, he's like, "But trust me."
But he had gone.
He had gone.
The first
so he
year.
Was kind of
who was this? Brian Bradford. Oh, Brian Bradford. Okay.
Yeah. So he was kind of my mentor through the whole. He's like, "Trust me, it's gonna be awesome." And right. sure enough, like he was right. It was just so cool.
Once we were there the first day, and we just got up to the pool, and he got a giant like goblet of gin and tonic.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay, we feel better now. Already.
Yeah.
And we immediately met people at the pool first. You know, a Jeremy man we met at the pool didn't know who he was
yeah, we
at
didn't
all.
Know who he was.
One of our good friends now, and just it's a bunch of people at the pool actually that first time that are just like we talk with regularly now.
Yeah. So it was funny is that like you know, like I said, we were not obviously speakers or anything. We just literally went as attendees the first year. It was Gina and I, and it was Gina and I's first year at the company, so we'd had kind of a lot of indoctrination, and it was a really kind of tough year. And then Lon had explained to us that we should go to this thing, or he told me, he's like, you should go there for reconnaissance. And I said, oh, cool. And then he said, okay, I'll do that. And he goes, the good thing is that you won't have to worry about preparing any presentations or doing anything like that. You're just going to check it out. It's like, okay. And then he said, well, you should take Gina with you too. She should go. I was like, okay, I'll go with Gina. And so Gina and I arrive in Portugal and we're like exhausted, like, you know, because transcontinental flight or whatever. Mm-hmm. We have no idea how to get there.
Yeah.
We arrive at Lisbon Airport, no idea. So I said, well, we have to go to Troia. So I'm assuming we got to get a cab. And we go to the airport and there's like, you know, this booth that says, well, you know, get a coupon and it's prepaid to take your cab. And I guess it's kind of a ripoff or whatever, but it's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
So I go there and it's like, get a coupon and it's a prepaid price to take you to the island and or to wherever you need to go. So I said, I need to go to Troia. I need to go to this hotel. It's like, okay, it'll cost you this many euros. I was like, okay, fine. I'll pay it and it's fine.
Yeah.
So I get on the cab and the cab driver's like, oh, okay. So we need to go there and he takes us there. But the way that we went is instead of just going to the port and getting on the passenger ferry that takes you right to the hotel, we went to the port and they went on the car ferry.
Oh,
interesting.
Right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So we went on the car ferry because the cab literally took us door to door to the place.
Oh my God. Like,
okay. So we get on the car ferry. And then we get in, you know, we're sitting in the car and the car is sitting there and it's on the boat and we've been on a plane, we're just tired and stuff.
Yeah.
And Gene and I was like, you know, screw, we're getting out of this car. We're going to go get some fresh air. We're on a boat. It's exciting. Right. And so she's like, oh, this is nice. And it was a little bit, remember that year was a little bit rainy,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Right. And so we were like, oh, it's like, you know, and from LA, just any kind of sense of rain feels actually good.
Yeah, totally.
Definitely.
Totally.
So we were there and we were excited. It's like, oh, this is relaxing. So we go up to the bow of the boat. We're looking at this fresh air. We can see the water, and it's like, oh, I heard there's some dolphins here. And then suddenly we hit a wave, and Gina just gets a massive, massive spray of water. She's completely soaked from head to toe, and we just start laughing our asses off. It's like, oh my God, welcome to Portugal.
Yeah, seriously.
Some seawater.
Yeah. Aren't you glad you got out of the car?
Yeah. So yeah, that was a really hilarious sort of moment for us. But it ended up being, you know, we made great friends while we were there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Andre has become a really great friend. Scott Ross, who was my boss at Digital Domain years and years ago, but I never really knew because he was the owner of Digital Domain and I was a modeler, right? So it was like, but now suddenly Scott Ross and I have become great friends, and he's been on the podcast three times.
That's awesome.
So it's kind of been a really cool thing about being involved in that community, right?
Yeah, the people they choose to be there are just, like, you can't find a bad person there. Like, anyone you talk to is just cool, and you just want to immediately hang out with.
Yeah. I think the biggest problem with THU is making sure you get some sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yeah, and I have to say, like, the TV thing, as awesome as it is, I slept more and I started missing more talks than I did the first year because I was like, oh, it'll be on TV. I'll just go ahead and nip off for a few hours.
Yeah, but you missed.
And I missed a lot of stuff. Like, I'd come back and be like, oh, and they'd be like, oh my gosh, did you see blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, no. I'm like, I'll watch it like later.
Yeah. I have a story about that because specifically I was done, right? Because I've been getting, you know, 3 to 5 hours of sleep for like four nights or whatever it was. It was like ridiculous. And now it's done. And then there was one of the fireside chats, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the, you remember the battle stories with Shane?
Oh, yeah. That one was so good.
I slept through that
one. What?
Yes.
Oh, that
so I slept through that one. So when THU TV came out and I watched it and I was like, I can't believe I slept through this one. I wish I had been in the audience when that was happening.
That was that was one where it's like, it was late. We're like, okay, we'll go to it. But man, it was so good and funny, inspiring. And
right.
Just awesome.
Just so people know, in case they want to go back to check out the THU TV stuff. It's the battle stories with it's got Shane and David Prescott. Who else was there? Oh, and Kevin Mack and Scott Ross.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about crazy shit that happened.
Yes.
And Shane did one of the most amazing Marlon Brando impressions.
Oh, yes.
So good. So yeah, good. It's so good. Out of nowhere, too. Like, never would have expected
it. Yeah, for a while. Like, basically, the story of the Island of Dr. Moreau was the majority of that story.
Yeah.
And it was one of the funniest things I'd ever heard.
Yeah. It was,
and
it
everyone
was
is telling me about it. I was like, oh, don't spoil it.
And totally.
And I have to save it for later. But
yep.
Yeah. But we were burning the candle at both ends there because Devin had an early morning workshop and then we both were doing the art battles at night. And the art battles would start at midnight or one.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I think Andre this year has said he's going to try to change the schedule a little bit so it makes it available for people to actually get some sleep, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I think people just can't do that so much, right?
It was rough. And then with people wanting to volunteer and help with the TV stuff, so it's like...
And the TV stuff was starting at like 8 a.m.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're going to bed at 5 and waking up at 8, it's hard.
It is hard. It is hard. And you definitely hit that moment in the middle of the day where you're like, oh, I can't go any longer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's changing to making sure everyone sort of has a balanced life because it was really kind of it's tiring at the end. And you guys were there like very early, like we were. We're like a couple days before, right?
Yeah,
because we learned from the first one. It's like you gotta
take some time to adjust.
Some time. Yeah, and we stayed a day or two later. Also,
to
try and like so we weren't just immediately on the plane right afterwards. Mm-hmm. Also.
Right. Yeah, but I remember even like the first day we were there, I was up to like 5 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
He had what was it like? He's like, oh, this is day -2. I'm like, what are you talking about? Day -2. Like you have stuff planned like week ahead of time before the event even.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. That's what I want to talk about. Sandcastle competition.
Oh, where I won.
You did. So that was day -1, I believe.
Yes.
It was the sandcastle competition, which is a great idea. And what was happening on that was to basically get one of the speakers and assigned a team of attendees to make a sandcastle. And you guys had like 3 hours to make a sandcastle.
Yeah.
Yes. Give it a theme, right? Did you have a team too?
I did. Yeah. She kicked my butt.
She did. What was your team? What was your?
We had the drunk, fat, wine drinking seahorse.
Right. You guys had the drunk, fat wine. Yeah, I remember that. Okay.
Yours looked pregnant.
It did look pregnant. Yes. And Louise was weird too. Was the one who was giving birth?
Yes, it was giving birth.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, that was very odd. Also, yes,
that's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember, and I remember looking at everything, and I was one of the judges.
Yes,
by the way.
Yes, I remember.
So I remember looking at Joy. And was like, oh. And it was like, it was really good. It was really good. One other thing is structurally, you actually gave it volume. So it actually had some height to it, which I thought was, I used to do sandcastle competitions in architecture school. So I know a little bit about the challenges of dealing with gravity. But there was something, I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then the title of yours was Paint Me Like One of Your French Unicorns.
Yes.
Sexy unicorn.
I forgot what teammate came up with that one, but
that was perfect because that's a line from what's the
Titanic,
movie?
Right.
No. Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, she says that when he's drawing her.
Oh, right.
Paint me like one of your French girls.
That's right, from Titanic, of course. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because after the competition, because there was a ton of really talented people on all the teams, which was just insane. But a lot of them were concept artists and stuff like that. And everyone did it kind of how we did, where we approached it almost like we were drawing in the sand and building it up.
Right.
And Joy's was one of the only one where it was like, no, you're viewing it from standing here. So it was like a sculpture.
Mm-hmm. You guys drew it as a plan and extruded
exactly.
it out.
Right. It looked great if you were in a drone or something looking down at it.
Right.
But the way that they approached it was just really smart. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, of course. And then I think the sun was setting around the time.
Yes.
It was time to
judge.
And
it got that rim light all around it.
Yeah.
So good.
I was like, oh, man, they nailed it.
But what the secret to our thing, though, was the water, though. Because I remember every single team got a bucket and a shovel kit in the beginning. And there were like three extra, and there were like five or six teams or something. So it says, oh, these extras go to everyone, and they threw them out. But they were inside these giant IKEA bags, so people were grabbing the shovels and the buckets. I grabbed the bag.
Yeah.
And I dragged that into the water right away and just had a supply of water at all times.
The secret is the water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The balance of water, and I know this from the structural architectural side of me, the balance of making a good sandcastle is making sure you have enough water, because someone made something really tall and just collapsed at the last minute.
Yeah,
right?
There's a few sad
collapsed a couple times too. Yep.
Yeah.
It was always heartbreaking when I'm working on a face for a while and then a little bit of wind blows.
That was such a great idea, though, because I mean, it was something that none of us really had experience in.
Mm-hmm.
And like, talk about team building, everyone on my team I recognized throughout the rest of the week.
Yeah.
And like Jenny Harder was on my team, and whenever we see her now, we're always like Team Derek, like high-fiving and stuff.
That's
like,
great.
It's awesome. Mm-hmm. It was such a great perfect idea.
And the thing that I think was important that Andre put out there was to make sure that everyone talked to each other in a good way. You know, I remember actually sitting out during the happy hour sessions at one point, end up chatting with this guy. And it's like, hey, how you doing? Because you were kind of encouraged to do that. And you realize very quickly by doing that you kind of want to do it all the time because you're always meeting someone that has something else to say, right?
Yep.
And I ended up talking to the guy who was the sound mixer for the event.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was really great conversation. And he was like, yeah, you know, like talking about stuff. And I started talking about podcasts. He's like, hey, you know, by the way, I'm doing my own podcast here and I'm trying to figure things out. And he and I were talking about sound stuff, which, by the way, this is all kind of new to me. It's like I've learned a lot in the last year or so. But just the idea that you can do that, right?
Yeah.
You never know who you're going to talk to. You never know what information you're going to get from that person.
That's
right?
Awesome. Yep.
So it's really kind of cool to have those types of conversations with people all the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was good. And we try, I mean, because artists can be introverted to begin with, but, you know, we tried our best to talk to as many people as we could and see new people. And we obviously would like, after being exhausted, we're like, okay, let's go hang out with our friends that we're familiar with. But it's just like, hours and hours and hours of meeting cool people and seeing cool people and catching up and all of that.
What's interesting about it is there's obviously little groups of people that constantly get together all the time, right? But the clickiness of that group does not exclude anyone else.
No, totally. Right? Yeah, totally. You can join whatever group you want.
You can sort of like, And it's very inspiring to do that because you kind of basically realize how many people you get to know. And a lot of people who have listened to this podcast who have talked to me, and it says, I feel like you joined a cult.
Oh, no, I get that all the time too at work. Whenever I talk about it, it's like, are you sure you're not talking about that cult?
Yeah, you do?
Yeah.
It sounds like it. I mean, because, you know, everyone's just in love with it. And then you're always like, you got to go there to really get it.
Oh, by the way, good luck getting a ticket because there's only 600 available.
Yeah, exactly.
No, and it's so hard to explain. You're like, no, you just need to get it. You see a bee there and then you get this feeling and it's like, oh, well, it kind of does sound like a cult when they say it like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like how many, like on the closing ceremony when everyone's like thomping their feet and shouting Andre. Yeah. Like that sounds like a cult.
Exactly. Lord Commander Andre.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really cool. Really great. So, all right. I want to wrap up on Teju because we could talk about that.
We could talk about it
for a long time. But let's talk a little bit about what it's like to be a game artist, because I think that's something that I haven't actually had that much on my podcast. So for people that are interested in that field or that idea, I want to sort of put aside a few things that people may not necessarily realize, that game artist doesn't always mean you're not a rendering artist or a modeler or, you know, like what are the similarities that you would say between just a general concept artist, someone who draws, someone who is a matte painter, and someone who works in games? Like can you sort of break that down a little bit?
Well, I don't know. I feel like when I talk to people in film, they seem to be very, very specialized. And I feel as a game artist, you need to kind of be able to be ready for everything.
Okay.
Because I've worked on mobile games. I've worked on games across platforms. And those have different levels of detail that you need to adhere to, different styles that you need to flex between. I have lit, textured. I mostly model. But it's just, if someone wants you to rig something, you gotta rig it too and figure out how to import that in. I've worked with like 5 engines professionally by now.
Okay.
So you just have to, I don't know. I think what's really, really interesting about games is that there's always something more you can learn about, because we're so interconnected with designers and programmers and people making the scripts and the whole overview of the story of the game. And you get to put your input into all these little things that are all part of this whole big art picture.
Yeah.
Just more than just like an image or a sequence going across the screen, you know?
Right. That's cool.
Yeah, to me, like the biggest thing is working, like it's a game, right? So the gameplay is always like the most important thing. And so it's interesting because you'll maybe get, we call them like gray blockouts or something like that, where a designer goes through and says, you go through this hallway, jump up here, shoot these guys, go to this next hallway, right?
So that's kind of the almost the storyboarding of the game,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Okay. It's super blocked out. Maybe have some dudes in there. Maybe the dudes aren't even in there yet, but it's explained to you what's going to happen there. Mm-hmm. And then you go in and make it all pretty, right? Just throw all the art at it, make it look awesome, make it look
and
like a real space.
You're not doing it by frame. You're doing it so that you can see everything.
Right. Mm-hmm. You look up, you look down, all of that. And it's got to be unique, but not too noisy and all of that. But then you always have to remember like, okay, wait, but there's dudes over there who are shooting at me. So if I put something here, maybe that's a piece of cover that's not supposed to be there. And so you're always like, every decision you make has to be kind of vetted by the gameplay, which is pretty different than like when I was working at Blizzard, where it was like, we knew what the story was, we knew what the storyboards
were. That was a cinematic, right?
It was a cinematic, yeah.
Right.
And so we were able to kind of like just make it look really pretty. This stuff happens and the story is kind of like not necessarily that one frame or whatever. It's the whole picture. I don't know. I don't know if that comes across right.
No, but that makes sense. That makes sense. Now, was that your goal, is to get into game stuff?
Yes, absolutely. I've always wanted to work on games ever since I was little.
Really?
I was kind of a shut-in when I was younger and played MMORPGs my entire high school life instead of actually socializing.
Really?
So these games that I was running around and making friends in became my world. So I kind of just wanted to make those worlds for other people when I grew up.
Wow.
So, yeah.
How long have you been playing video games that you can think of, like hardcore playing video games?
Let's see.
It's forever, pretty much, right?
Nintendo 64.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my Game Boy Color. So I was playing Pokemon a lot and Harvest Moon a lot. And yeah, and then I got into Ragnarok Online, which is a very old MMO that was all sprites. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Star Wars Galaxies, which is my favorite thing ever.
Really?
It was incredible. And that was high school. And then Final Fantasy XI. Oh, whew.
Yeah, pretty much forever you've been playing.
Yeah, ever since, I think, yes, I was 10 when I started.
So that's why you're so competitive.
Yeah, I guess probably, so. Yeah. But even before that, I was playing in arcades and stuff. My parents went to Las Vegas every single weekend because they were part of like some video poker club or something. Okay. But I would be like in the arcade while they're gambling, or I'd be in the hotel room with whatever console I could bring while they're downstairs playing their games. So.
Wow. Okay. Where did you grow up?
Arizona.
Arizona, okay.
So it was we drove.
Right.
It was every weekend.
Wow. So you spent a lot of time in front of a screen.
Yeah. Pretty much my entire life.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I want to bring that up because I think that a lot of people is like, oh, screen time, et cetera, how much with their kids, et cetera. I don't necessarily always think that's a bad thing if it's put into the right context, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think that, you know, playing video games can be really interesting, right? And one, it can lead to a career that you're obviously interested and successful in, but it can also sort of develop. Playing a video game is more engaging than watching TV.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Right. And I was active too. I played a lot of Dance Dance Revolution.
Well, I'm not trying to say you're not active because I think that, to be honest, like my kids, like the only console we have is a Wii, like the old school Wii.
Oh, yeah.
And they still love it. So like I don't see any reason for them to have anything different right now because they're happy with that. But they get exhausted playing Wii.
Oh, yeah.
You know? They get really exhausted playing Wii. It's like, oh, Daddy, I want to go bowling. I was like, all right, you know. And I do a lot of stuff. We do go on hikes with my kids and stuff like that. But I'm trying to figure out like how to balance that world for them, you know. And one of the things that there was something that really kind of engaged with me a little bit. It's like, you know, they get out. We sort of limit a little bit their time on the tablet, and it's more like trying to just not just say, shut up, kid, and here's a tablet so that I don't have to talk to you right now, which is something a little bit of a problem, I think.
Right.
I want to let them do that. But they figured out how to play, they prefer playing Minecraft on the tablet than on a computer, even though it's way more engaging on a computer, right? Mm-hmm. Right. But I like it on that because it's like a little bit more free form for them, which is basically the point of Minecraft.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. But I remember at one point we had my tablet and my wife's tablet, and they were both had tablets. Like, all right, you guys can both play Minecraft because my son, who's 3.5 years younger than my daughter, he wanted to do whatever my daughter's doing because he's a little brother and he wants to do whatever his big sister's doing.
Totally.
And then what happened, which this is the thing that was incredible, it was like this flash, was they got on and they played, and because they're on the same network, they saw Steve Minecraft listed. And what Steve Minecraft is that it's the same game, but they're connected on the network.
Oh, nice. Oh.
So suddenly they realized, like, wait, is that you? And they could, there was the first time they had an interactive.
Collaborate.
Oh, that's so cool.
And their minds just blew. And because it's Minecraft and you can do whatever the hell you want, they're like playing hide and seek. They are building things together. They're doing things and they're communicating constantly. It's like, all right, I'm over here. Okay, come over here. I need you to help me do this. And then suddenly, that is so way much more engaging. Mm-hmm. And no, they're not necessarily, you know, running around and playing basketball or whatever, which they do anyway.
Right.
But they're collaborating, they're building together, totally. They're doing, it's like
coming up with
ideas, inventing their own whatever, you know? So I think there's something that's very important about gameplay.
Yeah. And it's in, you know, when she was actually mentioning the games that she grew up on, they were all like community-based online games where they were very team-oriented,
right?
Very objective-oriented, and you have to work together to beat the objective and stuff like that.
Yep.
And yeah, that stuff is important, you know, and you don't necessarily get that in other ways sometimes. Like she was kind of a loner and hung out with her parents a lot, and this was one of her ways of like finding that community and socializing and stuff. So
yeah, and it's when you were a loner, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing how you can move away from being a loner with the community online. Mm-hmm. It can be dangerous though.
Yeah,
and I'm saying dangerous because sometimes people can be just as much as it's very opening for people who are normally alone to come out and be friendly. Mm-hmm. It's also a complete freedom to be an asshole.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. And we've definitely both ran into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sure being a girl online is probably, she runs into it too a lot more than I do. But
yeah. But do you hide behind your being a girl?
No, I was usually pretty open about it. Back in high school, I got no attention from anyone. So I was like, I get a lot of attention for being a girl online.
Really?
No, I was not very nice online during some moments of that life because I thought, oh, I could be cool online and only talk to people I like.
Oh,
and be
so suddenly because you were exclusive,
yeah.
Now suddenly you want to be part of the cool kids club online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't, what am I trying to say? I regret a lot.
Well, okay.
That's high school.
Well,
I don't.
Of course you're not. You're developing on a side. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you're not exclusive at all, and you're a very lovely woman. So there's it's kind of funny to think about the fact of you being like shy and like didn't get a lot of attention in high school. It's like, really?
I know.
It's like, yeah. All right. But anyway, it's pretty funny like to think about that because, you know, by the way, when I would play games all the time, I always played a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Yep. I don't know why. It's because I thought, I actually do know why. Because I didn't like playing, like, I always liked to play fantasy games for some reason. I mm-hmm. like to play more, you know, like, and also I didn't always play online. Skyrim was like huge for me for some ridiculous reason,
love
right?
Skyrim.
But I always played a girl because I didn't want to be the big buff guy that just chops things down,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to be like some kind of wizard thing, and somehow I felt like a feminine form felt more realistic to be more wizardly like.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was, I was more like the elf girl from Lord of the Rings or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, like I had to be that kind of person. It seemed less directly violent, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
And somehow I felt like I needed to be a woman for that.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of mixed feelings about that when it comes to online games, though, because I remember my best friend in Final Fantasy XI, someone I only knew online.
Someone you only knew online
only
and,
knew
was,
on,
and was your
was
best,
my
friend.
Best friend in that game.
Did you ever meet that person?
No, not in real life.
Where was that person?
Well, I say she right now. We were best friends, and we were like the two girls that are always up to mischief and like hanging out together all the time. And after like 6 months of hanging out pretty much every single day, she came out to me as a man.
Oh, really?
And asked if he could be my online boyfriend. And I was like, what? You're my best friend, but like that's...
Yeah.
Really?
Now whenever someone tells me, oh, they play girls online, I'm like, well, you have to be honest about it, right? If someone asks.
Yeah.
Right.
You should let them know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I was playing one of the early, I think it was one of the early Diablo games. It might have been Diablo 1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was playing online a lot, right? And so I ended up hanging out with this person that, and I was young, youngish. I was in grad school, but... And basically this person talked to me, was like, oh yeah. And came out, it's like, she was like we talked for a while and we would like meet up every night to go do whatever things we were going to do online. And she came out to me, was like, oh, yeah, she's like a hardcore lesbian woman from San Francisco. And I was like, yeah, it's like, I don't know that world at all.
Yeah.
Right? That's not mm-hmm. my world. And it's not to say I'm against lesbians or not. It's like, I just don't hang out with those people. And it's like, well, you're hanging out with one now. It's like, all right. And cool. So it was very, you know, like the fact is you're just two little icons on the screen. Mm-hmm. So when you come together, you just come together with a similar goal and it doesn't come with all the baggage of what you look like or what you actually are. So it's a kind of a different thing.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty cool. I've had friends. I don't play as many like online like RPGs as she does, but I've had friends shooters that are like a dude that I met. We both played well, and so we kept playing together. Then I added him on Facebook, and he's just like Midwestern guy, like really kind of crazy, almost like gangbangery type life. And I'm like, I would like probably never hang out with this guy in real life. But then we play Halo together all the time and like buddy drinking beers. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's just kind of, yeah, it's kind of cool how you can kind of throw that stuff away and
did
just
you
enjoy.
Have a similar thing to her? Were you playing games a lot when you were?
I played games a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like for me, my big thing, this is why, I've always found myself between, like visual effects and, games is because I loved, Myst and Riven growing up, which kind of, you know, movie.
Now I can
style
see
stuff.
Why you got into environment design. Of
yeah.
course.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love that stuff.
Right.
And my uncle at the time actually was working at, it was Santa Monica Studios Vision Art, I guess is what it was. Uh-huh. So on Independence Day and Godzilla and stuff like that. So I knew about like the CG world even at a young age.
Yep.
So yeah, but I've always loved games like forever. So for me, it was like when I went to Noman, it was more of like choosing which direction I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. And at the time, well, and still now the visual effects industry is way more kind of shaky. Like you can get a full-time job easily in video games and have, you know, insurance right. and benefits and 401ks and all that stuff and like feel a little more comfortable with where you're at. Yeah. So I think I kind of chose that more stable path.
Yeah, that's good. We just, the podcast that came out this week, which will show how much of a gap there is between the podcast, because unfortunately I try to pre-record as many as I can, so mm-hmm. I have a buffer. But the podcast that just came out this week is the one with VFX Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like, yeah, there's a lot of, like you realize how hard that industry actually
totally.
Is. And
totally.
It's ridiculously competitive.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put it this way, right? Here's one thing that's really great about games. Anyone can buy a game. And there's a lot of people that buy games and you don't have to buy a ticket to a movie theater to play a game.
Right.
Because there's only so many movie theaters in the world.
Right.
There is only so many seats you can sit in. So there's only so much money that a movie can make.
Totally.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in order for something like Star Wars to make as much money as it did, which is making a lot of money, it's, and by the way, still far less than something that a video game can make, right?
Yeah.
Video, like, Grand Theft Auto will make as much money as Star Wars made in 48 hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Call of Duty and Grand Theft Auto make $1 billion in the first 2 days, basically.
Right. So $1 billion in 2 days is what those games can make. And Star Wars is like unbelievable record and it takes 2 weeks to make $1 billion,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. Worldwide. So those games are available because they're appealing to a bigger audience and to the individual. Like you just have, all you have to do is go out and buy the game,
right? Mm-hmm.
Right? And you can play it on your computer and then you're only limited by the population of the earth.
Yeah, totally. Right? Yeah, totally.
In a movie theater situation, it's like, no, you're limited by how many people you can fit in the theater. And the only way Star Wars is able to make that kind of money as fast as it did is because they had to start screenings of Star Wars at 8 a.m. for a week.
Yep.
And have them play every 20 minutes. If you go to ArcLight at the opening weekend or mm-hmm. for the opening
week.
We
did.
Yep. Yeah. Which was great, and I love Star Wars, and it was great. But the way they made that money is that every 20 minutes, yep. Star Wars mm-hmm. was playing. It was like
crazy.
The express train to Star Wars.
Crazy.
I think every single screen was playing Star Wars. Like when we looked at the screens, like...
Yeah, I think
it was every single one. No other movie was playing that night.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So that's how you make that kind of movies, right? So it's really, really tough to be honest. And so therefore, the industry is just tight, right? And so in video game industry, it's... You have time to develop it. You have time to work on it. You have time to make things the way they're supposed to be, right?
Yeah. And it what's interesting is there's a big range now. Like, because with visual effects studios, there's still like some of the smaller medium-sized studios that do commercials and stuff like that. But for like the big, you know, blockbuster movies, as was mentioned in a lot of your podcasts, there's not a lot of companies that can do that. And now with video games, like there's this big indie kind of resurgence that's happening. So you might be two people who can make something that maybe makes $4 million, but $4 million for two people is awesome.
Yeah.
And then you have the whole other spectrum, which is, you know, the Grand Theft Autos that cost, you know, $200 million or more to make. $500
million
to make. But you have this,
but
you
it
still have a
but
range.
They already know that, okay, it's gonna take 6 years or whatever it takes to make Grand Theft Auto, right?
Yeah.
But they already know that they're going to make a billion dollars in 2 days, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They already know that, and it's going to, that money is going to continue to run in. So right. that they know that they're going to, it's less risky, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, let's say indie games, like you've said, you worked on some small independent games, right?
Yeah.
Some of those are risky, but
Well, I would say like 3 out of the last 4 companies that I've worked at are closed now. So
right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still volatile out there for mm-hmm. sure, and indie games especially, because you kind of have to go all in, and you either mm-hmm. hit it out of the park,
and so many companies try to sell you that dream when you go in, like, okay, everyone here is going to make a percentage from this game hits,
right.
And they talk about the money way more than they talk about the content,
right?
Because like every new video game franchise started as some small project, right?
Yeah,
and so mm-hmm. that's always the dream, that you'll be the like if you look at Grand Theft Auto 1, it was a tiny little it's a game that would look dumb on an iPhone now.
Sure.
But now it's this huge thing. So it's like, that's kind of the dream that they get you with.
Mm-hmm. Well, the classic story is the Rovio story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those guys made 11 or 12 games. No, like 50 games.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like so, a lot of
they
games.
They made a lot of games and they were about to go bankrupt, right?
Yep.
And I was like, all right, we got one more idea. Seems like a really dumb idea. catapult some birds to hit some pigs.
Yep.
Boom, right? Now mm-hmm. there's like... the Angry Birds movie is coming out and like everything is like, it's a big,
my little sister bought me Angry Birds boxers.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So anything you want with Angry Birds, you can get it now.
Yeah. So there you go. So that's a franchise that works and it's exciting and people like it, you know?
Yeah.
My son loved Angry Birds stuff. He never played the game.
Interesting.
Yeah, our nieces loved Angry Birds stuff. Before they saw Star Wars, they were playing Angry Birds Star Wars, and that's how they recognized the characters.
Yeah,
yeah. It's so strange.
We I hate to say it, but my kids, they were indoctrinated into the classic Star Wars at a very early age. Let me just put it this way. My son's, one of his first words was Yoda. So
that's
the proper way to do it.
That's the mm-hmm. proper way to do it. Yeah, yes. Yeah. It was a good thing. It's a good thing. Well, listen, we're doing pretty good on time. I just want to hit up on one last thing, if that's okay, because,
sure.
And this is mostly for Joy, because I think, something that's happened a lot, and this actually came up a couple of times, is talking about in the CG world specifically, women in the industry and how that happens. And you don't seem to have ever had an issue with the fact that you're a woman in the industry, based on the fact that you played games as a woman, except for the story you just told us about where your best friend ended up being a guy that you thought was a girl, but. How does that play out in the game industry specifically?
Well, it depends. I've worked at companies that it's been really good, and I've worked at companies that it's been really bad and harder to fit in. Mm-hmm. But you kind of just have to take everything with a grain of salt.
Right.
I mean, you can't... I don't know how to put this delicately, but... it's basically what
you don't have to be delicate.
It basically is based on perception, you know.
Right.
Because I've worked at places where I've like kept low and been chill, but then never socialized with people, and then I felt really excluded. There's places that I've worked at that I've tried to be everyone's friend, and then I end up getting these weird, like, oh, so and so has a crush on you now, and all this sort of weird stuff. It's
right.
like, that's not work appropriate.
Right.
I've been asked how old I was at interviews before.
Oh boy.
And
that's illegal, by the way.
Yeah, it is illegal. It's completely illegal.
Right.
And like, when I get the question, oh, you grew up playing games, really? That sort of thing, like
right.
at interviews before. But it's just, you have to, everyone is trying to do their best. And, mm-hmm. but sometimes perceptions get in the way of that. And that's what I have to always remember, is that no one is out there to get you or out there to judge you.
Yeah.
They're all trying to do their best. Even if you feel like everyone's tiptoeing around you, that's still a form of respect. So...
Yeah, they're trying to figure out a way how to make it work, but it sucks that it's there, right?
It sucks that it's there, but if we keep on picking at it, I don't think it'll go away. I think the more we just decide to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, the easier it becomes.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I mean...
Well, I mean, that being said, you have had, like, inappropriate experiences happen to you. Where, like, so... you give someone a benefit of the doubt, but when they cross a line, like they cross a line, right?
Mm-hmm. So sure.
It's not like, oh, it doesn't exist. I'm going to pretend it doesn't exist. It's like, you got to be diligent about calling it out when it happens.
We don't understand that, Devin. No one has ever come up to you and talked to you about how sexy you are.
No. Never.
Never. Yeah. In our industry, we're not the sexy guys. No. Right?
You've never been felt up at a networking event.
Wow. Really? Yeah. Well, like that happens, and it sucks that happens, you know?
Yeah.
And therefore, you're not necessarily treated, and it's harder for you to get the respect of being in a leadership position and sometimes, right?
Yeah, well, I would say at some other companies I've worked at, I could see how that could be an issue if I was there for a long time. But right. At my current company, I don't see that as an issue at all.
Well, that's great. I mean, you have a good environment that they're like, you're part of the team and we accept that, you know. But it's tough. I don't think it's good to be that. I mean, there's been a recent discussion they had in a group online that I talked to, where we were talking about the specific the bake-offs, and the big discussion that was happening is how many people were not white men that were presenting at the bake-offs, and that was none.
Yeah.
Right. It was all white men. Yeah. And by the way, also the other thing that was kind of ironic, and not that they had anything to do, but most of them had English accents. Also. But that was just kind of a side note to that. Yeah. But it literally it's a white male thing that happens out there. Right. And definitely. It's all about men. And it's kind of bullshit. I think that there is great talent that happens in women that happens very naturally. And it's really beautiful that can happen, and there's no reason why, you know, no one should think it's like, why can't a woman play games, why can't a woman design CG, why can't she do this and all of that stuff. What's interesting, let's go back to the balance of men to women in the visual effects industry. What happens is, what I found, and this is a little bit different, is that based on men and women's brains are different. We already know that. And we can artistically cover different fields, right? Mm-hmm. So what I have found is that there are way more women compositors than any other part of it. And the reason I think that is that if you're going to go to a visual effects company, if you're going to look for any woman that's an artist, they're generally going to be in the compositing area. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think that is because they have an ability to see and perceive differences in color much better than men. That's the way naturally things happen a lot more.
Right.
You're not necessarily going to see many women riggers, but there are some very good women that are riggers that I have seen as well. It's rarer, but you're going to see that. Animators, generally speaking, are going to be more on the men's side, which is sad because I think women should be more animators because they can see a little more subtlety in things.
Right.
Men are much more brute force and about things. So I think that there needs to be a good balance of that. And I actually like to see more games oriented towards women as well.
I definitely do. I think my company's doing a good job of that, though, because we, Dice LA, released Mirror's Edge, which has a female lead. In Battlefront, we made sure there were female stormtroopers and female rebel soldiers. In Battlefields, we... I'm not going to talk about that.
Yeah, you can't talk about it. That's fine.
Okay.
But do you think that there are games that are more suited towards women than men? Like, or style games? Like, if you're going to say this is a game that women would like more than men, do you think that that's the case as well?
I don't know about things they would like inherently more than men. I know that women like to do more RPGs and action adventure games, like very story driven games. There are big women communities for games like Skyrim and Dragon Age,
right?
And Mass Effect has a huge woman fan base because they like the fighting, but also the storylines and the building relationship of people. Mm-hmm. One of the first games I was completely into was Harvest Moon, which was a farming game,
right?
And it's very like min maxy and planning the right things at the right season, and
you're not necessarily interested in killing people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that also had a like a relationship component to it. So I think maybe that attracted more women, because that was one of the first online communities that I joined, was a Harvest Moon fan group,
right,
where I met a lot of other girls that were interested in this. It's like, oh, we're playing games too.
Right.
And of course, like the Final Fantasy games, because they're very story driven also. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else. Rhythm games, I found a lot of people play those, or a lot of women play those also.
Right.
I don't know what inherently they would like more than men, though, because men like all those things too.
They do. I mean, like, you know, I don't know, maybe I've got more of my feminine side when I play games, because I'm not necessarily, I like the story. Like sometimes when I play Skyrim, I just want to climb on the top of the mountain and wave my hands in the air. Yeah, you know?
I love that. Yeah. I want to jump off every waterfall.
Yeah, jump off a waterfall and go diving, whatever. Yeah. So yeah, very different. I don't always know when to kill people. So, all right. Well, so a couple other things we're going to do is we'll make sure that we have a bunch of references for people to see the work that you guys do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you guys can provide that, it would be great. I'd love to make links to some of the THU talks that we talked about.
Totally.
And any of the other artwork you guys have, because those are going to be really sort of inspiring to people. And I want to make sure everyone gets to understand it. Is there anything else you guys want to plug? Besides your Noma DVDs, which is awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
And uses V-Ray.
It does use V-Ray. Yeah. I fell in love with V-Ray at Blizzard and never looked back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Blizzard was a render man studio, but the map painters used V-Ray.
Oh,
and we were way quicker and were producing a lot of really awesome shots quickly.
Right.
And I never looked back. So.
Have you used the newest V-Ray?
I haven't used the newest V-Ray yet.
Oh, it's so sexy.
Yeah,
V-Ray 3.3. Well, actually, no, what? You're on Maya, right?
I'm on Maya.
Okay, so V-Ray 3.3, which is in Max, and will be out for Maya soon. I have seen
the features and stuff. And
it's just kind of crazy. Yeah. It's really nice to see that. So it'll be really cool to see that. So we'll definitely love to promote your DVD. Is there anything you want to talk about that you can promote?
Well, we're going to be going to Noman live in Australia beginning of March.
Yeah, beginning of March. We can give you dates on that, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Noman's kind of partnering with an Australian company, and we're going to do a bunch of workshops and stuff there.
Great. I think this podcast will come out before then for sure. Okay. So we'll put it up there. So if you can give me any links, I'll talk to Lynette actually.
Yeah.
Probably.
Lynette knows. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Lynette will be able to give me links on that, which is great. Well, cool, guys. I've been trying to figure out another sign off for the podcast, because buckets are kind of going on V-Ray. Someone told me I should say everything has for now, but that's not necessarily a good podcast sign off. I like the idea because it's funny, but I don't think I can do that. So I have to find something else. But for now, I'm still going to say the last bucket drops. And I appreciate you guys coming over. This has been awesome. I'm so excited we were able to do this.
Super cool. Yeah. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, the fact that we're all in town is also cool. So
totally.
We'll have to meet up. And then if there's any other THU stuff that comes up, you know, let's make sure and connect.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. All right. For the family now.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.